WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news. Now, here's your host, Paul Dragoo.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today's Thursday, April 27th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. Here are the stories we're following today. The battle for the American soul rages. North Dakota has just banned nearly all abortions. Republican Governor Doug Burgum signed a law making it a felony for doctors to perform abortions in most cases. Rape and incest victims are exempt, but only during the first 6 weeks of pregnancy. Last year, the U.S. Supreme Court's Dobbs decision triggered an abortion ban in the state. However, in March, the North Dakota Supreme Court blocked that ban until a lawsuit over its constitutionality was complete. The governor said the new law reaffirms North Dakota as a pro-life state. The law goes into effect immediately. It passed by an overwhelming 42-5 vote in the state Senate and an equally impressive 76-14 vote in the House. Representative Mike Leffer of the majority leader of the Republican caucus had this to say during debate.
When we talk about these life-altering decisions, let's remember this. We're speaking for those who can't speak for themselves. We need to protect their rights too. At the end of the day, we passed a trigger law in 2007, and I have no idea why the North Dakota Supreme Court is legislating. Our job is to legislate, they're just to interpret. So we're going to send another message to the North Dakota Supreme Court. This is what this legislature wants. We want pro-life in North Dakota.
The state's only abortion provider, Red River Women's Clinic, brought the original lawsuit against North Dakota's trigger law. The clinic's director told the Associated Press that lawyers at the Center for Reproductive Rights are likely to challenge the new law as well. Meanwhile, authorities in Montana arrested seven protesters who interrupted the state legislature on Monday. What you're watching is footage from the floor of the House of Representatives taken during the disruption. The activist has shown up to support Representative Zoe Zephyr of Missoula, who calls himself a transgender woman. He is banned from speaking for the remainder of the legislative session until he apologizes for comments he made last week during debate over a bill to ban gender mutilation drugs and surgeries for minors. On the third day of Zephyr's censure, some supporters showed up and started chanting from the galleries. Here are the comments that got Zephyr in trouble.
By this bill and by what these amendments do, if you are forcing a trans child to go through puberty when they are trans, that is tantamount to torture. If you vote yes on this bill and yes on these amendments, I hope the next time there's an invocation, when you bow your heads in prayer, you see the blood on your hands.
The blood on their hands that he mentions refers to studies indicating high rates of suicide among youth plagued with so-called gender identity crisis. Instead of blaming the obvious culprit, mental health issues, researchers condemn Republicans because they insist on protecting minors from what Zephyr and his ilk call life-saving, gender-affirming treatments. Montana Speaker of the House, Matt Regier, explained Zephyr's censoring to Missoula's CBS affiliate, KPAX TV.
So it's my responsibility as Speaker of the Montana House to ensure decorum, with all 100 members of us on the House. And there has been, every session there are people that are out of decorum, and we have to address those issues from time to time, and people get passionate, and that's understandable. And we've done that in the past. And every representative has, up to date, has acknowledged that and apologized and assured me that the decorum was going to be kept in the future. Representative Zephyr has made comments in the past that are derogatory and did not show remorse of staying within that decorum. And until that can happen and trust is restored, recognition won't be granted.
Regier said that Zephyr committed multiple infractions, including shaming fellow legislators for their votes and making personal attacks that he says do not belong on the House floor. He said he'll acknowledge Zephyr once he apologizes for his statements and assures the House that he'll observe the rules of decorum that apply to all legislators. On Monday, Democrats protested Regier's refusal to recognize Zephyr and insisted on a vote challenging his decision. Regier obliged them, the vote upheld the Speaker's ruling, and that was when chaos erupted from the galleries. And school children are also being assaulted by so-called trans people who insist on indulging delusions about themselves. A serious allegation has been brought against a Wisconsin high schooler, an 18-year-old male, who in March is said to have walked into a women's locker room where several 14-year-old freshman girls were showering in their swimsuits. He said he was trans, and then he disrobed. This was an adult allegedly exposing himself to four girls who are minors. Dan Lennington is deputy counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. He called the situation shocking. Here he is describing what happened afterward.
But what's more shocking is that this school district was totally inadequate in their response. Title IX prohibits sexual harassment and requires school districts to offer a number of supportive measures and investigations. But these teachers, administrators did not even investigate this matter the next week. And when the parents finally started to email about this and call about this, the school district couldn't even identify the policy. No one could tell the parents, what is the rule? What is the policy? And it wasn't even until a month after the incident that the school district actually sat down with the parents. That's a real shame. There's no clear policy here. And this could be going on in schools all across the country.
Title IX, to which he referred, prohibits sexual discrimination and harassment in educational settings. Schools that receive federal funds must comply with Title IX. Moreover, if the senior student was 18 at the time of the incident, he could face criminal charges. In a detailed letter explaining the situation, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty accuses the school district of gross neglect. According to the letter, the incident should have been reported and a Title IX coordinator should have offered the girls a chance to file a complaint. Ultimately, the district's initial response violated Title IX. It was about this time that the administration produced a guidance document about restroom accessibility. Attorneys say they couldn't find evidence that it existed or was enforced when the incident occurred. However, under this guidance document, males may still use the girls' locker room without any regard for the privacy or comfort of female students, it says. If girls want more privacy, they are directed to use a separate bathroom or locker room. Last weekend, the school district issued a press release that claims certain media accounts are ill-informed, inaccurate, and incomplete. It says the incident should not have happened, but that the district addressed it long before recent publicity. However, the final paragraph of the press release is damning. It reads, districts must balance the dual goals of supporting transitioning students while also protecting the privacy interests of all students, unquote. In other words, the administration plans to continue abandoning minors to perverse fictions and mental illness. So joining me today to discuss this is the New American's senior editor, Rebecca Terrell. Rebecca, welcome back.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I am well. It looks a little grim, but the way I'm seeing what is happening here is it looks encouraging. It seems like America is finally waking up to these cultural threats. And as I said at the beginning, the battle is raging, but that means that now sane Americans are fighting back. What is your take?
Well, I think there is a lot of reason to hope because we are seeing a modest exodus from public schools, and that's been since COVID-19. But I think we need to see a mass exodus before we can be really excited about what's going on. You know, we've you covered right there trans stories. I don't even like to use the term. I was trying to think of something better that we could, so we're not using the narrative of the left, because there's no such thing as transgender. Of course, they've opted for that name since the word gender is a little bit more ambiguous, if you will. You know, some people say, oh, that refers to grammatical designation, where it used to be transsexual. And of course, they gave up on that word when they had to admit that you can't actually cross over sex. You can't be born a boy and become a girl later. And then, of course, before that, it was transvestite, which was just a fancy way of saying crossdresser.
Yeah.
And prior to that, you know, it was in 2012 that they actually removed this as a mental disorder from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Diseases. Before that, it was gender identity disorder. And, you know, over time, they're just changing it. They keep changing, just like they change any verbiage, any narrative to fit what they want. So it's getting worse over time, and we're sitting back and letting it happen. That's not a good thing.
Well, I think what we're seeing, though, is we are starting to see pushback. And as I said, and I think a result of that is, for instance, conservatives in general, or you know, people who are not insane, we generally kind of want to do our thing. We want to do life. And we have this naive idea that if we just kind of mind our own business, they'll leave us alone. But I think people now are realizing that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And you know, you had mentioned, that's a very interesting point, how they removed this trans, or this, you know, this sexual confusion, mental illness. And that's really curious, because do you happen to know what was their justification? Because as I've said on this show before, and others have said, you would think it's like, that is one of the best indicators that there's something going wrong, that, you know, you have a mental illness.
Right, exactly. And well, it's also interesting to see, if you look back at the statistics prior to 2012, really only boys were involved in this. And it was great. PJ Media just unearthed earlier this week, I think, unearthed some research that was done in the 1990s about boys with, at that time, it was called gender identity disorder. And the research showed that a high majority of them also had mothers who had mental disorders. Mm. So there was a link there. But also, research showed that it was almost exclusive to boys. It hardly ever happened. There were no girls that had any of this gender identity crisis. Then all of a sudden, they take it out of the DSM. And in 2012, you start to see girls having this, for now it's epidemic.
Yeah.
So it is, it's a good question. I mean, I'm observing this trend, and I'm saying, okay, what gives? Mm-hmm. I really can't answer your question entirely, because quite frankly, I had time to delve into it and research it. But I think it's worth looking into and saying, yeah, what was going on there behind the scenes, and who calls the shots with the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual? And, you know, back when it was first constructed, I believe by the Department of Defense, I think that was the origin of the DSM. Homosexuality was also listed as a mental disorder, which, of course, now that'll get you thrown in prison for hate crime to say that.
Right. It's interesting how that happened. And it sounds like you have just inspired yourself to do a long form article for the New American, because these are things that our viewers need to know. I know that there have been other outlets who have done at least some sort of research, and at least on their part, what they found is that groups, I believe, like the ACLU and other more fervently trans advocacy groups are pushing on this. So this is a push, as you know. Obviously, this is no surprise to you. But now we're seeing a social contagion, unfortunately, and it's spreading. It's like, you know, just like a disease of the body, the social contagion seems to be the same. We have about 30 seconds. Any last thoughts on these stories that we just ran through?
Well, you know, I do want to go back to the pro-life story and say it's just as fantastic what North Dakota has done. And, you know, we need to be on our knees every day praying, but we need to do more than that. We need to get in this battle. It's like you said a little bit earlier, this is we really are reaching the 11th hour here. We've got a lot of enemies. We can't just sit back in our easy chairs and think, OK, it's going to take care of itself, or I'll just pray and let God take care of it. No, he put us here for such a time as this. This is our chance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Rebecca. It was so wonderful having you back, and we'll definitely have you back. And we will be right back on the other side of this commercial.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber, and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the Singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.
Welcome back. On Tuesday, President Joe Biden announced he's running for re-election. His campaign message is, let's finish this job. Echoing a theme of his 2020 presidential campaign, the 80-year-old president said his mission isn't a red or blue issue. Yet seconds later, he warns of MAGA extremists. Watch.
That's been the work of my first term, to fight for our democracy.
This shouldn't be a red or blue issue.
To protect our rights, to make sure that everyone in this country is treated equally and that everyone is given a fair shot at making it. But you know, around the country, MAGA extremists are lining up to take on those bedrock freedoms, cutting Social Security that you paid for your entire life while cutting taxes for the very wealthy, dictating what healthcare decisions women can make, banning books, and telling people who they can love, all while making it more difficult for you to be able to vote.
Did you catch that? Abortion equals healthcare. In his mind, the intentional killing of babies in the womb is healthcare. And of course, abortion supporters agree with him. And then there's the reference to MAGA extremists banning books. The video deceptively maligns concerned parents who don't want their children exposed to the radical LGBTQ agenda in the schools. That agenda includes exposing young children to graphic sexual descriptions and depictions, both natural and unnatural. Again, in schools, no one is fighting to ban public access to debased material. Biden is the nation's oldest president. At the end of the second term, he would be 86. Asked about his age yesterday, this is what he said.
With regard to age, I can't even say, I guess how old I am, I can't even say the number. It doesn't register with me. But the only thing I can say is that one of the things that people are going to find out, they're going to see a race, and they're going to judge whether or not I have it or don't have it.
And in news from Latin America, the government of Colombia's Marxist president, Gustavo Petro, is now in jeopardy after losing majority control of the Colombian Congress. Only 8 months into his presidency, Petro, a former communist guerrilla leader who is Colombia's first leftist president, has become unpopular among lawmakers in several political parties who supported him. He's been trying to create a socialist healthcare system for Colombia. The last straw came when he demanded the resignation of all cabinet ministers and suggested that some sort of emergency powers would be necessary to overcome resistance in Congress. As his radical leftist pedigree has become obvious, elements of the center-left coalition that supported him have now withdrawn their support. putting his presidency in a very weak position. According to one former Colombian cabinet minister, between the two sides of Petro, the consensus builder that looks for agreements and the radical with fixed ideas, it is the second that always wins out. We hope that Petro will not be successful in dragging Colombia down the same dark road as its neighbor Venezuela, and that his Marxist leadership will be rejected by Colombians. So joining me for the second segment is my colleague, Steve Bonta. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
I am well. I was listening to Joe Biden's mantra for his campaign, and I'm thinking, no, please, let's not finish this job.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of hopeful, happy talk on the right of late to the effect that, well, we're seeing a reprise of the Carter administration, only worse. And surely as Carter was rejected and Ronald Reagan became president in 1980, so too the American electorate will usher this bumbling old fuddy-duddy, leftist, radical left fuddy-duddy, we need to emphasize, out of office and bring in somebody, you know, either restore Trump or, I don't know, the governor of Florida or somebody like that.
Like that.
Things are very different between now and back in 1980, when Ronald Reagan became president. And by the way, I'm not saying that Reagan was the end all. I mean, you know, Reagan was in many ways a flawed president, also, mm-hmm. although he was a far sight better than his predecessor. But back then, we didn't have, you know, a leftist machine in control of electoral politics. And able to, you know, and I don't see that's as control has really has been released in any degree right. in any of the swing states. So it's very likely, in my opinion, that we're going to get Biden as president for four more years by fair means or foul, regardless of what the will of the people is. And this is a really, you know, spectacular difference. Also, Americans, frankly, have moved much farther to the left than they were in the 1980s.
Yeah, they're. You know. There definitely is.
I mean, there's undeniably a huge number of Americans now who support all these insane initiatives. I mean, you can find plenty of material on YouTube a decade or two old with then-Senator Biden inveighing against efforts to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act and saying that marriage is between a man and a woman and there's no doubt about that and so forth and so on. You know, but now he's showing his true colors because he no longer feels any need to camouflage them. And the same is true of leftist radicals anywhere. So we probably can't overstate the magnitude of the problem.
Yeah.
Now, where congressional elections are concerned, that's something else. There's still, you know, I think there's still hope. but before there is a change in presidential politics, I think there's going to have to be, you know, states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Arizona and Georgia and so forth. Are going to have to reform their electoral laws so that they, you know, they can't commit widespread fraud. And yes, I'm saying that there was fraud in 2020. Right. That is beyond reasonable doubt. I don't care what Fox News and all of the other paladins of acceptable opinion have to say about it.
Right. Now we can't be on YouTube, Steve.
Thanks. Oh, that's too bad. I guess. Well,
and this, you know, I want to throw something really quick about this. Is one of the reasons the John Birch Society has a Restored Election Integrity Action Project. It is so important, like you said, you need to work on this. Is one of the most important issues, top three important issues. We have to work on restoring election integrity, and it happens on the state level. I also wanted to touch on one other point that he made there, the deceptiveness of this idea that conservatives are banning books. This is so misleading, right? Because what conservatives are trying to do is ban books in schools where kids are learning, and they have these perverted books in there, and not just homosexual material and trans material, whatever, but just, you know, sexual material. And that's what conservatives are trying to ban, not, you know, not from the public space, right?
Well, we live in the great age of the lie. I don't think ever in recorded history have the liars of the world, and yes, I'm talking about most Democrats and a surprising number of Republicans as well, and certainly all of the people who make up the, you know, the deep state in Washington, whose only concern is maintaining their power and pelf indefinitely. Okay, I don't know that the big lie has ever been more audaciously proclaimed nor universally accepted. I mean, certainly there are those who reject. You know, I'm not saying it's the acceptation is universal, but I am saying that it's extraordinary that they can make these claims, knowing that they're false, but absolutely audaciously so doing, because they know that they're, you know, that the media mandarins won't challenge them. They will close ranks behind them, and it takes a fair degree of perceptiveness for people to say, you know what, this is just. I mean, it's like the people in the Soviet Union who reached a point where they simply laughed at anything that the Pravda or the other official communist news organs said on television, rejected them, assumed, you know, the presumption was they're lying.
Yeah, they.
And unfortunately, I mean, you hate to say, well, we need to attain a comparable level of skepticism and even cynicism, but it's reached such a pass because that's what leftists do. They lie. Leftism is a lie. Yeah. It is premised on lies, not only, it turns out, about things like human economic activity and social organization, but even biology and other basic science.
Then they're so brazen. We got 45 seconds. I didn't know. It's nice to see what's happening in Colombia, depending if you look at what's happening now. I guess the sad part is that they had elected a Marxist in the first place. But now it seems like now that they realize he's a Marxist, they're saying, we're not having this.
Well, I mean, Latin America kind of hangs in the balance at the moment. Another pivotal event this year will be the elections in Argentina in October. The economy's in free fall. It looks like Javier Milei is a shoo-in to become president. He's a hardcore libertarian Austrian economist, so that's remarkable. But the Argentine government announced yesterday, in a desperate attempt by the Peronist Casta, as they call themselves, their equivalent of the deep state, that they're now going to start purchasing all goods from China directly in Chinese yuan. So they've also gotten off the dollar.
Yeah.
Now, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, but right now it's an interesting contest, not just in Colombia, but all across Latin America.
Yeah, we're going to keep an eye on this. Thank you, Steve. That's all for our news segment today. For more Truth Behind the News, make sure to get a subscription to the New American Magazine. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com or by calling our office at 800-727-8783, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. That is 800-727-8783. And don't go anywhere, because after this, Dr. Duke Pesta and I have a spirited discussion about how every Democrat in the House voted not to protect women's sports. See you on the other side.
Hi, I'm Alan Keyes. I'm the host of IMTV's daily talk show about news and events in America. And I want to say a good word for the New American Magazine. Not only because Alex Newman has joined us as somebody who is periodically hosting a show, but because New American Magazine represents a alternative media that is willing to tell people the truth. With so much fake news spreading about, and the fact that right now this country is in an existential crisis, we remember who we are and where we come from and what our principles are, or we die. Reading New American Magazine can keep you up to the minute on the issues that are challenging us as a people and on which that survival hangs. You can check it out and subscribe at www.thenewamerican.com.
As a lumberjack, I've been cutting wood for decades. My job is pretty straightforward. I see the wood, I chop the wood. My axe goes through every time. You remember when everyone bought all the toilet paper? And they wanted me to wear these things? And someone invested a lot of money into this stuff. They say I'm part of a global plan. I don't think so. It's too hot, it's too cold. You know what? The weather changes. We even hear crazy ideas on how kids should learn.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
Visit thenewamerican.com and subscribe to get 50% off the cover price. And if you want an even better deal, use the promo code 10OFFSUB. Again, that's 10OFFSUB for more than 50% off.
Welcome back. I'm joined by Dr. Duke Pesta, the host of the Dr. Duke Show, a tenured professor at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, and the director of Freedom Project Academy. And today, we're going to be discussing about how Democrats are in favor of men taking over women's sports.
Yeah.
Paul, welcome, Duke.
Thanks for having me. I love these segments with you. And I got to tell you, this is one of those fault lines in culture by which we know we are in an existential battle here. The House of Representatives, the Republicans, pushed through a bill that's got to go to the Senate, of course, and then ultimately to the president. It won't make it, but a bill to protect women's sports, to keep sports in high schools and middle schools to women and men. The Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act of 2023, it would have amended Title IX of the Education Amendment to allow this change that boys play biological boys play boy sports and girls play girl sports. And what's really interesting about this, Paul, because this is that fault line, 219 Republicans in Congress, every single Republican voted for it. Mm-hmm. 203 Democrats, the entirety of the Democrat caucus, voted against it. And this is a very, very sharp delineation.
And this is in the House, right?
This is in the House of Representatives of the United States of America. This is bigger than any state legislature. Mm-hmm. This is the whole kahuna. And what it tells us is a couple of things. That so doctrinaire has the left become, that there's nobody in that entire caucus who is willing to say, to stand up for their own daughters, their own sisters, their nieces, to say, hey, you know, culture is changing, but if we fundamentally dismantle the idea of gender and biological sex, then you're going to have what's coming down the road, according to the left, right? You're going to have the logical end of this, Paul, is getting rid of men and women's sports altogether. All sports will either be co-gendered or no gendered at all. And think about what that will mean
For women.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, look at that. What was it a couple weeks back, that weightlifter in Canada, he signed on as, you know, a trans woman for like 5 minutes. He broke the record just to make the point. It's crazy. And going back to your point, they're so tribal. I think a great example was when Justice Ketanji Brown, was asked, what is a woman? And she's like, well, I'm not a biologist. That's how insane this has gotten.
There was recently, just a couple weeks ago, somebody in Congress asked the Department of Education Secretary, Cardona, literally, the chief educational officer in the country, and he could not and would not answer the question. He was asked directly, what is a woman? Now, remember, he was pushing Cardona at this session to let men play women's sports. Men who identified as women, he was arguing, should be allowed to play all the sports that girls now currently occupy. And when he was asked that question, he couldn't answer it either. Think about that for a second. You demand that men who identify as women play women's sports, but you yourself cannot and will not define the word woman. How can you make any of these changes if you will not commit to actually what a woman and a man are?
Well, that just further reinforces the label that some use for the Democratic Party, that it is a party of chaos. It is obviously on the road. It is on a mission to destroy all semblance of the structure that's laid out by the divine. This is, I don't know any better example than this. The fact, like you said, 203 representatives.
Every one of them.
Every one of them. And I bet you most of them know this is BS.
They have to. They have to. Look, I'm telling you, at least half that. Well, I'm more than willing to believe 103 AOCs really are true believers. I don't believe the other 100 are. I think you're exactly right. They realize that on the progressive left. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why the left is so successful, where you've got Republicans fighting amongst themselves, rhinos and conservatives, you know, all these different caucuses of radical conservatives and moderates. Meanwhile, when the rubber meets the road, the left always votes lockstep. And it's always for the most progressive option. And so it is a kind of spineless list. To be in the Democrat Party nowadays means that you better not challenge the orthodoxies of LGBTQ, of trans, of abortion. These are the sacraments of that quasi-political religion. And you see it here. And so the argument is, you know, you've got the same left for how many years? Since I was a little boy, Paul, probably you too. We've been told that the left was the party of women, working women, feminist women, women's rights, breaking the glass ceiling, yada, yada, yada. And within literally 5 minutes, apparently they've jettisoned women in favor of men who actually think they're women or pretend to be women.
I think this is the fault, and we don't often talk about this, and it's like this constituency, these people who send these lunatics to Congress, are they not reaching out? I can't imagine. Again, I mean, you have states like Washington, and you have most states. And again, I'm imagining the constituencies are sane people realize this. Why are they not pushing back on this? Because at this point, it's like no matter what the bigger design is, and we know there's a design. We know that there are those who very influential who are through various gears and levers creating this narrative. Meanwhile, why are the constituents not saying we can't do this? We cannot destroy women's sports. This is going backwards.
One of the reasons for it is because how the mafia, the LGBTQ mafia, punishes people who do. Take Riley Gaines. She was the swimmer who got outswum, if you can use that term, by Leah Thomas, the 6'4" guy with the massive wingspan who became Leah, instead of Will, to win all those swimming meets
she
in college.
She got mobbed in San Francisco.
San Francisco State University. She went there to give a talk to make this exact point on behalf of girls and young women. We have the right, in the name of feminism, in the name of equality, in the name of Title IX, we have the right to have women's spaces. And she was literally threatened with death. She was driven from the stage. Cops had to whisk her away while people were screaming death threats at her.
Yeah.
That's why people don't fight back. And to be very clear, much of the opposition from young women to this has been anonymous. They have written in, but they won't give their names. Because they know what happens to you. If you're a progressive woman who simply believes that women are women, take J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter.
She's got so much crap.
She's a billionaire, so they can't cancel her. Dave Chappelle, African-American Muslim comedian who dares to challenge the alphabet people, as he calls them, the LGBTQ. They try real hard to cancel him. Billions of dollars insulates you.
That's a good point, because Netflix actually, they ended up siding with him in a while. They got rid of some of the lunatics at Netflix because, I guess they were throwing fits. Yeah. And so that's a good point. You know, you're familiar with, I guess, the Stanley Milgram experiment.
Yes.
And one of the points from that showed that, when he started, the basis of the experiments, but there's also in some of the experiments, what he learned was that when people saw other people stand up and do the right things, they were more likely to do it. And, the conclusion being that visible dissent is what's important, which then comes back to kind of a sidebar, but that's probably another reason that we are seeing the narrative so controlled. Social media, TV, we saw obviously Tucker Carlson's gone, Dan Bongino's gone from Fox. All corporate media seems to be erasing, getting rid of the dissenters. And I think this is part of the attack plan here is we can't let regular people, a lot of people know that they're not alone.
Yeah, it's the pioneers who take the arrows. We know that, right? So people like Riley Gaines who are standing up for women's rights, J.K. Rowling on a bigger stage, they're doing something that's causing a lot of hate and threats of violence their way. But the hope is that more people will stand out. Meanwhile, I think you're right that what we're seeing from the uniparty, let's call it that, the Republican-Democrat nexus, they're not that different from each other. One of the things I admire about the John Birch Society society. For years, they've been telling us simply voting for Republicans doesn't fix anything.
Yeah.
And as we've seen, when Republicans have power, things don't move right. They move center left, right? Slower.
It's just slower.
Usually. Although I would suggest spending with Trump was almost as bad as what we're seeing from the Democrats now. And so I think the broader question here is that you mentioned Fox News and even CNN getting rid of Don Lemon.
Oh, yeah.
I think you made a good point that the Uniparty is beginning to decide that we try to muzzle the extreme left and what they call the extreme right, typical conservatives. We try to muzzle them and we don't give them a platform so that the Uniparty, which is moving lockstep left, can slowly do what the activists on the left want done right away. So they're sacrificing. Take Budweiser. Right. Mm-hmm. They've now suspended the Wharton graduate moron who came up with the Dylan Mulvaney can. And I think I was reading today, I think they've lost 19% of market share. 19%.
Yeah.
But notice what they never did do.
And so, they weren't even doing that well to begin with.
No. Well, the thing about Anheuser-Busch is that they quietly put her on leave. But they never apologized for doing it.
Yeah.
And that's
afraid,
that's why they're still bleeding. If all they had come out and to do was come out and say, hey, we made a mistake. We misunderstood our customers. We apologize. People would be drinking that beer again. But they don't do it because here's why. I go back to my comment about the mafia. They would rather lose $9 billion in revenue than face being outed politically by the left. They don't want the protests. They don't want to be accused of being anti-trans. They don't want the nasty Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Corporate America is so terrified about the left doxing them that they'll lose billions of dollars rather than compromise.
And that's so sad because we see that. For instance, we saw that with COVID in a way. People were wondering, why are these doctors not standing up? And then we saw the vanguard, and many of them we've had here, you know, the Dr. Malone's, the Dr. McCullough's, Dr. Bakke. And now we have a movement. Now we have, they've lost the narrative and they know it on COVID, on the injections. And now, so they're going to start figuring out how to do damage control. This is no different. We need the vanguard to stand up, step up, move ahead. And everyone else will follow, at least the cowards who aren't, you know, who won't do otherwise.
There are signs that people are beginning to fray a little bit about this. There are signs. I mean, the fact that Bud actually backtracked and got rid of her, that's something.
That's a good say, sure.
Or the fact that, you know, Don Lemon, because, you know, Fox has a history of parting ways with people who are too conservative.
The rebels.
Exactly. The left, though, lunatics like Don Lemon never get fired. So to have him removed is a sign in the right direction. The fact that Musk is at the head of Twitter, although Twitter hasn't seemed to have improved much, there does seem to be out there stirrings that some of our most sacrosanct values, speech, women and men being women and men, the nuclear family, which has been the real recipient of the hostility of the trans community. And I think that's an important thing to throw out there, too. This trans stuff, it's not really about mainstreaming a very small percent of gender dysphoric people. It's not what this is about. What's it about is the undoing of the nuclear family. And that's why, my friend, I think much more attention is being paid right now to drag queens than to trans people, because there are a lot more of them, number one. Number two, the drag queen phenomenon is interesting because most drag queens aren't really gay and they're not really trans. They're just dudes wearing women's clothes.
Yeah.
And notice how much effort the left is expending to mainstream that. It's just a stupid cultural phenomenon because they know that if they can get that mainstreamed, then everybody will fall in line with the much smaller trans agenda as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super old, but I think I'm old enough to remember when, like, for instance, like, what is it, Twisted Sister?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like his thing. You know,
Dee Snider. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But it's like nobody said that dude's a woman.
Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper. Yeah, yeah. And they like women.
David Bowie.
Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but now, obviously, it's taking on this really lunatic element to it. And not only that, now they want to punish you. They don't just want you to accept it, and they don't necessarily even just want you to celebrate it. They want to punish you if you will go around and you dare not agree with this insanity. I can't just help but think it's some sort of beta test or whatever, because I can't. They want to see who is dumb enough. Who is compliant enough? What kind of population do we have in the world for when we roll out the real totalitarian stuff, the real tyrannical stuff?
The modern euphemism for socialism is inclusion. Everybody's the same all the time. No one will make any more money than anybody else. Men or women, women or men. I think lurking behind this inclusivity garbage is socialism too.
Well, that's a good point to leave off, and something that our audience should think about. Thank you, Duke. Thank you for joining us once again. And we will be right back after these messages.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid. And then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
And for our final segment, here's the John Birch Society's legislative and research team discussing state legislation in Ohio to restore Republican government. And that's Republican as in a republic versus a democracy, not Republican as in the Republican Party. Let's watch.
This is Christian Gomez again for the New American Magazine, and I'm joined today with Peter Rakowski, the research associate. Peter, thank you for coming back again.
Yeah, it's good to be on, Christian.
So today we're discussing our legislative alert for the state of Ohio, restore Republican government in Ohio, support Senate joint resolution to stop direct democracy. Now, that's quite a mouthful of a title, but can you tell us a bit about this alert, its significance, and what is happening in the state of Ohio?
Yeah, so there's a really good resolution that's been introduced in Ohio. It's Senate Joint Resolution number 2. It's sponsored by State Senators Robert McCauley and Teresa Gavaroni. And what this resolution would do is it would place a ballot measure on the ballot for August 8th, which is coming up pretty soon, but it would place a ballot measure to change the process for referendums, for popular initiatives. So right now, it only requires a simple majority to pass any constitutional amendment.
You're referring to the state's constitution?
Yes, so the Constitution of Ohio. Only a simple majority of the electorate needs to vote in favor of an amendment in order to approve it. This resolution, if the legislator passes it and if the public supports it in the August election, it would change the Constitution to require that 60% of the population votes in favor of any amendment for it to go into effect.
So for this to pass as a referendum, what percentage of the vote are they going to require?
Well, for this, it would require 50%.
Because that's what the current...
But then it would raise it to 60% for any future referendums.
Okay, so essentially right now under current state law or under the current constitution, rather, of the state of Ohio, like you mentioned, if 50% of the population or 51% of the population says we agree to this popular amendment to our state's constitution to enable the government to do whatever, then it passes very easily. And that sounds pretty scary. I mean, hence why the alert says stop direct democracy. Can you just tell us real briefly, what are the ramifications of democracy? Why is democracy so bad? The people get a voice. The people get to have a say in government, even participate. What's so wrong with that?
Yeah, so the founding fathers did not want us to be a democracy. Our country is not a democracy. The founding fathers did not intend us to be a democracy. They intended us to be a constitutional republic, which is very different. Constitutional republics, what they do is they protect the rule of law, they protect our God-given freedoms from any infringements upon them, including the tyranny of the majority. A majority of the public could vote in favor of any infringement on our rights. You know, 51% of the people say that, you know, we don't want people owning or carrying firearms, you know, no right to self-defense. 51% of the people could do that, and then that would be the case. 51% of the people could say, we don't like what you're saying in public, so let's restrict your free speech.
So 51% of the people could agree to take the money from the other 49% of the population, and if 51% agrees, well, that's democracy, right?
Yeah. So democracy is a very dangerous concept. Now, people in the media, people in, you know, just in society in general, they like to praise democracy and, you know, cast it as this glorious form of government. But in reality, it's not. It's a very dangerous form of government that very much threatens our God-given freedoms. So the purpose of government is to protect our freedoms. It's not to allow 51% of voters to do whatever they want and to tyrannize the 49% who might disagree with them. So with this resolution, you know, why it's so important is because it prevents 51% of the people passing these very draconian and radical amendments to Ohio's constitution, essentially Ohio's fundamental governing document. So, you know, that it should be harder to amend that than just 51% of the people.
Now,
so,
doesn't the Constitution have something to say about state governments and how they operate in terms of the form of government they're supposed to have? Like, a state can't decide to be a communist state, even though that could be debatable about certain states, maybe. Constitutionally speaking, no state can adopt a form of government that's communist or a Islamic theocracy or something like that. What does the Constitution state about the state's governments?
Yeah, Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution says each state shall have a Republican form of government. So not a Democratic form of government, you know, not a communist form of government, Republican form of government, a constitutional republic, a republic that protects and upholds our God-given freedoms, and it doesn't allow those freedoms to be nullified or to be infringed upon, even if 51% of the people don't care about those freedoms and want to ignore them.
So Ohio, like the U.S., is a republic, not a democracy.
That's completely right. And now, SJR 2 recognizes that.
Okay. Now, what about other states? You know, obviously, this relates specifically to Ohio. And of course, if you live in Ohio, go to jbs.org/alerts. /state, and then click there on the, I believe that's the right URL, but anyway, on jbs.org, you'll find the state alerts, and click on the map there, the state of Ohio, you'll find this alert there. But other states, Peter, do other states make it so easy to amend the Constitution? Currently, 51 or 50% of the population can approve an amendment to their state's constitution. What are some other states that may already do this?
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of states do that, particularly those more on the West Coast or west of the Mississippi River. So states like Idaho, states like Arizona, California. It only requires a simple majority, 51% of voters, to pass any constitutional amendment. And then furthermore, anyone can put things on the ballot through ballot initiatives, so the legislator isn't even involved. So in essence, you can have wealthy left-wing donors funding these campaigns for referendums, getting them on the ballot, spending enough money to easily put them on, and then those left-wing donors only need 51% of voters to actually amend that. So unfortunately, there are a lot of states where that's the case, and it's led to some very unfortunate constitutional amendments to the state constitutions.
When a state allows its constitution to be altered or amended by 50 or 51% of the population, or when a state like, say, California allows for laws to be enacted or new laws created by way of referendum, giving the people the ability to a vote on laws, that is more of being a more like a democracy than a republic. So if we are to keep and preserve our republican form of government at the state level and also the federal level as well, we need to stop these kinds of measures. So if you live in, say, some state that's not Ohio, what should you do? What can you do with regards to this particular alert and bill, Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 of Ohio?
Yeah, so contact your state representatives, your state senators. Tell them to introduce and also to pass a similar resolution to put an amendment on the ballot to raise the threshold for approving amendments to the state constitution, or also have them pass a resolution to put a ballot referendum on the ballot to eliminate the referendum process in general. I mean, states should not be putting things to voters where only 51% of people can make massive changes to the state constitution. These changes should happen through the state representatives who are specifically elected to represent the people. So we shouldn't even be having referendums in the first place. So anyone should contact their state representatives and state senators about that.
Okay, sounds really good. So whether or not you live in Ohio, still go to jbs.org/alerts, click on the state of Ohio, click on the alert, and the hyperlink is SJR2. Click on that. You'll find there the text of the bill, and you can send that to your legislator, whether they live or don't live in Ohio, and say, I want this to pass in my state too. So anyway, thank you so much as always. Take care and God bless.
Thank you for joining us today. And remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. We will see you tomorrow.